This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Coal was, not all that long ago, king in this country. But a natural gas boom and new rules on the environment are pushing coal out of the electricity market. It's a transition to natural gas and renewables that is generally good for the planet, but one that comes with costs, human costs. Sarah Gardner from our sustainability desk went to Central Appalachia, where coal has been especially hard hit and where people are starting to contemplate a future without it. Here she is.
If you want to make a fool of yourself in eastern Kentucky, ask people if they have any coal miners in their family.
Father was a coal miner. My uncles were coal miners.
All my uncles, everyone in my husband's family.
All my grandfathers and my grandfather-in-law and my father-in-law and my husband.
My uncles have done it, and I guess it's just in my blood.
Coal is eastern Kentucky, or at least it has been for the last century, which is part of the problem. They've already mined the thickest coal beds.
It's just the coal seams. They're getting smaller.
Smaller and harder to get at, says underground miner Ryan Trent.
So the more rock you cut, less coal you're getting, which is less money you're making.
Which is why Appalachian coal is having a hard time competing, not just against natural gas, but against newer, more efficient coal mines. Throw in stricter regulations on strip mining, and you've got production slowdowns, mine closures, and 15% unemployment. That statistic includes Trent, who's been out of work for over a year.
And I've jokingly talked about my other buddies that's been laid off in the mines that I got the softest hands in eastern Kentucky now from doing so many dishes.
Trent and other miners are used to the ups and downs of the coal business, but Justin Maxson, president of the Mountain Association for Community Economic Development, says this time feels different.
It is different. I mean, I think to lose almost 7,000 jobs in 18 months is a catastrophe. It's a huge economic collapse. Folks, to some degree, feel like they're under cultural assault.
The realization that this could be a permanent decline in what's been the lifeblood of the region is just now beginning to settle in after years of warnings and, some would say, denial. On a Thursday evening at a tattoo parlor in Letcher County, owner John Haywood and his friends are playing music and talking coal.
I can remember my dad when I was a young boy saying, oh, there's only so many more years in coal. And people have been saying that for, I feel like, ever since I was little. And I'm 36 now.
Haywood's coal mining customers, they were among the best paid workers in the county, even without unions. $65,000, even $80,000 a year with good benefits in a place where the poverty rate is close to 30%. But those guys, they don't show up much anymore.
They used to come in once a month, even twice a month. You know, tattoo collectors, they're willing to sit for a long time and get covered up.
I was born and raised in the mouth of a hazard holler, with the coal cars roaring and a rumbling by my door. And now they sit in a rusted row of empties, and the yell and end don't stop here no more.
People here may be mourning coal's decline, but that doesn't mean they've found something to replace it. In fact, they've barely begun. Some blame the slow start on all the war on coal rhetoric. They say it's distracted coal towns from finding alternatives. Others say politicians have misspent coal severance taxes, money intended for economic diversification. At a roundtable of regional leaders in the mining town of Hazard, I popped the question. The question is, what's the alternative? What's going to replace coal? Does anybody have any good ideas? Insert long pause here. But that's because I was asking the wrong question, somebody told me. No one thing can ever replace the coal economy, he said. Besides, this isolated mountainous region first has to get more four-lane highways and better cell and internet service. The feds and the state have targeted the area for special assistance, but as of yet, there's no regional strategy. Jeff Whitehead runs a jobs program here that started during Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty. He says eastern Kentucky needs a bailout.
In every other industry, whether it be farming, auto industry, I mean, what happened in Detroit when that industry was threatened? There was a lot of government support, lots of it.
Some out-of-work miners here have left to take coal mining jobs in other parts of the country, but others like Jeff Combs love Appalachia more than mining, and they're willing to do local jobs at lower wages. Combs is training to be an ambulance EMT.
Well, for me, I'm just a hillbilly and have friends in just about every county around. All the family's here, and you know, when you want to get together, it's it. You don't have to travel hundreds of miles. Yeah, just deep roots.
So deep-rooted, East Kentuckians joke about it. At a shop where they make dulcimers, craftsman Mike Sloan, in true Appalachian tradition, explains with a story.
This guy dies on a Friday afternoon, and he goes to heaven.
St. Peter shows him around, says Sloan. There's one group playing harps, another picking flowers, and then they stumble onto a group of prisoners.
People are chained to the walls and they're screaming and crying and everything, and the guy is really perplexed. This is heaven. You know, and he says, what's going on here? And St. Peter said, oh, that's the people from Eastern Kentucky. They still want to go home every weekend.
In Eastern Kentucky, I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
The music in Sarah's piece that you're hearing right now was performed for us by Kentucky musicians Lee Sexton, Brett Ratliff, and John Haywood. We've got more of it and a slideshow of where Sarah went when she was out reporting this piece, all at marketplace.org. Coming up tomorrow, Stephen Beard takes us to an English village that lost its coal mine some 30 years ago.